this magic moment. So different and so new, was like any other, until I met you. And then it happened.
So welcome to This Magic Moment. I'm your host of the show. This will be our final installment. My name is John Forward. Today I'm going to be finally getting around to Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2, the last movie in the series, picking up from a cliffhanger at the end of Deathly Hallows Part 1. This is the only movie that was split into to two of all the books, and anyway, final part. It's been about a month since I did the last one. We'll say it was to build anticipation, and I guess that's true to some extent. It was at least a year that people had to wait in between watching these last two movies. Yeah, built up a little anticipation. Reality is, I've just been busy, been working more. The Fantasia Film Festival that's normally in Montreal over the summer was online this year, so a couple of weeks I was watching a lot of those movies. But anyway, we're back to Deathly Hallows, and we picked up right where we left off in the Deathly Hallows Part 1. The final scene is replayed here. We've got Voldemort digging up Dumbledore's corpse and getting the Elder Wand, which is one of the three titular Deathly Hallows, the other two being the Resurrection Stone and the Invisibility Cloak. So that's our first scene, and then we cut to Warner Brothers logo and a bit of the cold open. The opening of the movie seems like a Dark Souls video game intro, which I'm a fan of. It's very dark and gray, and you've got kind of a chorus singing and like orchestral music, and there's armies forming, and Snape's kind of insidiously looking over the formation of armies, and pretty early on, to establish the tone, we're reminded that Dobby, the little elf or dwarf or whatever he's called, he's still dead. We see his grave. Seems like an odd thing to include. I don't know if Dobby was a fan favorite character. I remember not liking him at all in whatever the first movie that he appeared in. Deathly Hallows Part 1, he was a bit better, so but I don't know, seems like I would think that Harry would be more upset about his owl that died in the last movie, but we don't get a mention of Hedwig, I think his name was. So plot-wise, we're continuing to search for the remaining Horcruxes that need to be destroyed before Voldemort can be killed. He split up his power into seven doodads that Harry needs to track down. The first one that they go looking for is hidden in like the bank vault that is run by the dwarves that I think we saw in the first movie. And they've got one of the dwarves in the safe house that they're in, and they kind of convince him to help them sneak into the vault to get this Horcrux. And turns out that the dwarf, in exchange for helping them get into the Horcrux, he's got his eye on the Sword of Gryffindor. Which is a problem, because that is the only way that they can destroy these Horcruxes, but they make a decision to, we need to find the Horcrux, we'll figure out how to smash them later. So they agree to his terms, and they all disguise themselves, they go into the vault. Some of them are invisible, some of them are shape-shifting. I think the only thing that is even slightly comical in this movie is them trying to sneak into the bank without ID. I think it's Hermione that's pretending to be Helena Bonham Carter. I don't know what her character's name is, but being very insistent that I don't think you need to see my ID. And they're like, no, we do. Let me see your wand. And they have a bit of a back and forth. I don't remember how that got resolved, but they end up going in. The dwarf ends up double-crossing them and kind of abandons them in the vault and runs off with the sword. If he was going to double-cross them anyway, I'm not entirely sure why he didn't just steal the sword that he seemed to be, like, when they were in the safe house before. It seems like he was just hanging out in a bedroom staring at the sword that's leaning against the wall. He probably could have just stole it without going through all this fuss of sneaking them into the vault and then leaving them down there. But anyway, they end up getting out via dragon, which I'll talk about a bit more later. What else we got? He gets away with the sword, but then ends up dead or something, and the sword just kind of disappears. We don't really find out what happens to the Sword of Gryffindor. I thought that it was gonna just reappear to Harry and the gang at some point, like it did when they found it under the ice. But anyway, we're on to our next Horcrux. They found the first Horcrux, which is like a chalice of some sort. The other one, Harry keeps getting visions of, like, you know, video game hints of where you can find the next Horcrux. And they know the next one is in Hogwarts. It has something to do with Ravenclaw. We get a bit more into the bond between Harry and Voldemort. That's how Harry keeps getting these tips about where to find the other Horcruxes, but it's kind of a two-way street, and Voldemort is getting tipped off at what Harry's up to also, and whenever they destroy a Horcrux, Voldemort has a big dramatic, like, I'm in pain moment. So the next one's in Hogwarts. Harry sneaks in there, but Voldemort knows that that he's there because of the connection, and, you know, the everybody's battening. I don't know what the word is. They're shoring up Hogwarts, ready for an attack. They sneak in, and before actually attacking, Voldemort kind of puts a hit out on Harry. He just kind of telepathically communicates with all the kids and just tells them, like, give up Harry and you'll all be safe. And turns out only the Slytherin kids are on board with that. Everybody else is on Team Harry, but it doesn't work. Voldemort attacks, and there's kind of a big fight scene I'll talk about. We go find the Ravenclaw Horcrux. Luna gives him a tip that he needs to talk to a ghost because no living person has ever seen it before. I was getting excited because I thought we were going to get to see the pervy toilet ghost. I forget what her name is, but it was a different one. It was some Ravenclaw lady who was reluctant, but anyway. And, you know, there's a whole thing. Voldemort's wand cracks when he fires the big blast to take down the shields at Hogwarts, and that kind of establishes that that wands choose the wizard, and that Voldemort's not the true bonded wizard with the Elder Wand that he took off Dumbledore. And anyway, we find out Voldemort's snake is the final Horcrux that needs to be killed, and, you know, you know how this is going to go. Eventually all the Horcruxes are going to get smashed, and Voldemort will vanquish. It's the fun is in the journey, though. There was some fun stuff in this movie. Getting into the vault, they had a guard dragon, and the dwarfs kind of shook like a cowbell, kind of something that apparently causes the dragon pain. That's the only way to kind of sneak by it. Everybody seems to be horrified about the dragon abuse, but the dwarves seem to relish in it. And you know, they go into the vault and they get double crossed. There's a pretty cool scene of the of them escaping the vault via the dragon. What else do we get? So the dragon flies them out. The eventual siege on Hogwarts is pretty cool. There's lots of battles and explosions and fighting and stuff. There isn't like one scene that's a siege. It's kind of happening in the background a lot, and there's a couple of big events that are given more attention. One of the things that happens is Neville, who's a character that has grown on me throughout the series. He ends up, as part of their plan to defend Hogwarts, they make use of the other kid. I think his name is Seamus, who's always like having stuff blow up in his face in the previous movies. So he's the demolition expert, and Neville leads the bad guys down some bridge that get blown up, and they are all presumably dead. But that was a pretty cool scene. We don't get much for new characters since this is the final outing. We do get Dumbledore's brother, who is just filling in for Dumbledore, basically. He doesn't do a whole lot. They kind of retcon that he's been helping them all along. He's the one that sent Dobby to help them out. But he kind of is kind of a negative Nelly and seems to be trying to convince them to just give up on the whole thing. And then, I don't know, he doesn't have a whole lot to do. Previous movies, I try to cover the flying aspect. I was glad to see that there was not the typical scene of just magical flying around and everybody smiling and having a good time. There was some a couple of things, like them flying out of the vaults on the dragon, but that wasn't like a fun thing. That was like a, oh my gosh, we're gonna almost die. But anyway, they escaped. That was good. The wacky roller coaster ride that they had on the way to the vault was, I guess, the closest thing, but didn't rub me the wrong way for some reason. That was a fun scene. Voldemort and Harry get into a tussle at one point, and they kind of fly around as black smoke. But again, it's not the smiling at each other and be like, isn't this wonderful type thing that always annoyed me. No Quidditch in this movie. Harry's still got his little Quidditch ball that Dumbledore left for him in the last one that he needs to kiss to open, and it's got the Resurrection Stone inside of it, which, I don't know if that was previously established or not, but it seems like a pretty big shortcut that they were taking. Old characters, like I said, Neville, was doing pretty cool in this movie. When we talk about the ending, we'll get into that more later. McGonagall, the old lady one, when Harry Potter sneaks into Hogwarts and Snape is now in charge of Hogwarts because he killed Dumbledore, he's like, anybody that's caught helping Harry Potter will be, I don't know, bad things will happen. But McGonagall comes out and has a bit of a standoff with Snape, and you know, shoots at him with her wand, and he scurries and jumps out the window, and then McGonagall decides to send all of the Slytherin kids down to the dungeons, which seems like profiling. Like, I still don't understand Slytherin house. Are they all bad guys? And if they are, why are they allowed to be there at all? But if they're not all bad guys, why are we sending them all to the dungeon just because that one girl was like, let's give up Harry Potter? She seemed to be the only one. But anyway, McGonagall gets one. She hasn't really done much in these movies, other than be kind of motherly, but you know, she gets to beat up Snape a little bit in this one and save the day a little bit and take charge of Hogwarts. Malfoy, the little Aryan boy, he's back. I still don't really understand. Like, I don't know if he's if he was redeemed in this movie or if he is a true bad guy, but he's just kind of a wuss. I'm not really sure. Malfoy and his bully friends attack Harry and Hermione and Ron in the library with some big crazy fire spells that they don't seem to be able to control, and burns the whole thing down. And rather than leave little Malfoy in there to be burned alive, Harry ends up saving him. And then, like, later on, there's a scene where, you know, spoiler, everybody thinks that Harry Potter is dead, and Voldemort's like, come over to be on my team, and nobody steps up. But Malfoy Jr., kind of his mommy, tells him to come over, and he does. Voldemort gives him kind of a weird hug. Malfoy Sr. is still in this movie. He's kind of a jerk. I thought that he was in jail or something previously, because they found out that he was a bad guy. He's looking kind of scruffy. He looked kind of regal when they first introduced him, but he seems pretty worse for wear, and just seems to be kind of Voldemort's bitch in this movie. Snape is back. Another character I like, but I don't fully understand. Voldemort unceremoniously murders Snape, just because there's a whole thing about Voldemort's not the true owner of the Elder Wand. He thinks that it's still bonded to Snape because he's the one that killed Dumbledore. So Voldemort thinks that if he kills Snape, then he gets to take over the wand or something. Harry stumbles upon dying Snape, and we get some Snape backstory, because Snape cries some magical tears into a vial and gives it to Harry, and then Harry pours it into Dumbledore's memory machine, and we get some flashbacks of Snape, who was always a creep, lived in a tree stump, seemed to have a romantic thing going on with Harry's mom. I thought briefly that we were going to get, like, we were going to find out that Snape is Harry's real dad. I don't really understand what was happening there. We get a flashback of Dumbledore telling Snape that he needs to kill him, and so, like, Snape, I guess, was a good guy all along. It's not terribly clear what the whole plan was. Snape seemed... They kind of make Dumbledore out to be kind of a monster in this, too, and Snape is just horrified that that Harry is being going to be sacrificed at some point to kill Voldemort. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned that or not, but it turns out Harry Potter is one of the Horcruxes also. I still don't completely... This movie never really explains... Voldemort gave part of his power to Harry by accident on that fateful night many years ago. I still don't completely understand the backstory there. But anyway, Snape has a line chastising Dumbledore for his treatment of Harry Potter, and saying that he's raising him like a pig to the slaughter. And werewolf guy from previous movie, he's kicking around. He doesn't do a whole lot except for just die and become part of Harry's ghost squad with his parents. And I don't know if there's anybody else in the ghost squad. The ghost squad doesn't seem to... They set it up like they're going to help out somehow, and I don't think they did, unless I wasn't paying attention. I don't know. Teen romance. The bane of these movies. It's there a little bit, but it's skipped over. Ron and Hermione end up going on a side quest because now that they lost the Sword of Gryffindor, they need a basilisk tooth to break a Horcrux. So they have a bit of a side quest where they go and steal a basilisk tooth and smash the chalice thing that they got out of the vault, and then they have a quick makeout. It's something that's been building up for 7 or 8 movies, and it seemed kind of anticlimactic. Not that I really want to get into it, but I don't know. At one point, Ron yells out that that's my girlfriend as he's like running to fight somebody or something, which I don't know if they had that conversation. If you just make out with somebody, I don't know if that makes them your girlfriend. But anyway, Ron and Hermione, aside from their little side quest to break the one Horcrux, don't really have much to do in this movie other than make out. They continue to hammer us with Harry Potter and Ron Weasley's sister. I forget what her name is, but the two of them have zero charisma. I don't know if it's better in the book. I'm even less invested in their relationship than I am with Ron and Hermione. She's just there. Not invested at all. I'm more invested in the Harry and Hermione thing that I thought was set up in the previous movie. Brian Godso disagreed, but, you know, they had a whole slow dance thing to Nip Cave. I don't know what was going on there, but that was intriguing. It was a wrinkle. But abandoned. It was just HP, or that's how I have it in my notes, Harry Potter and Ron Weasley's sister. You know, they're still a thing. Don't care. Surprising teen romance. I never saw this coming, but they seem to set up Luna and Neville to be a pair, and that seems like a good couple. I buy that. I would like to see the side adventures of Luna and Neville. J.K. Rowling, if you're out there and you're listening to this, you know, you've just put out the book about the the guy who apparently dresses up like ladies to murder people. Next on the plate, can we get a Luna and Neville side story? That's what I want to hear. But anyway, moving on to the end of the movie, we get we get Voldemort versus Harry Potter showdown in the woods, where Harry Potter needs to be killed by Voldemort because he's one of the Horcruxes, but kind of the dramatic weight of this is kind of taken out because we already know that that Harry Potter has the Resurrection Stone, and he's just gonna die and come right back to life immediately. That seems like something that should be more of a surprise for it to have any weight. But there's a weird scene after Harry gets killed. He goes to heaven, which looks like the train station to him, and has a little chat with Dumbledore. And there's some weird, bloody, aborted fetus-looking character hiding under the bench, which I think is supposed to represent the piece of Voldemort that's in Harry that has been killed now. That's weird. That's something out of a horror movie. It's not really. But anyway, so they carry Harry Potter's corpse to Hogwarts. Who's the big giant guy? The big guy with the beard, I forget his name. He's carrying him. He seems to think that Harry is dead, and Harry doesn't tip him off. There's a weird moment with Malfoy's mom, where she seems to be in on it, but they don't really explain that. But anyway, Voldemort comes back to Hogwarts and be like, "Hey, check out this corpse of your hero, Harry Potter. Why don't you guys just all give up and join my team?" And as mentioned, Draco Malfoy is the only one that reluctantly joins up. Neville steps up and he gives his big rousing speech and excuse me, ends up killing Voldemort's snake, which is the final Horcrux, and Harry comes back to life and fights more with Voldemort, who dies, and he flakes away like in Avengers Infinity War style. And that's the end of Voldemort. We don't really find out what happens to the other bad guys. So now Harry ends up with the Elder Wand. This book and this movie is about the Deadly Hallows, and they make a big fuss about them in the previous movie about how whatever wizard has control of the three Deathly Hallows, the Elder Wand, the invisibility cloak and the resurrection stone would be like the ultimate invincible powerhouse, untouchable wizard of all time. Nobody really ever acknowledges that Harry's invisibility cloak that he got from his dad since movie one was like the invisibility cloak that's a Deathly Hallow. I assumed as much, but they don't really explain that, and nobody else seems to really make that connection. So Harry conveniently ends up with the resurrection stone just because it was hidden inside of his snitch that I'm not sure was ever explained how that got in there. And then he got the wand from Voldemort, so Harry had all three things. They don't seem to make much of a big deal about that, but because Ron and Harry have a bit of a conversation, like, what are you going to do with this wand? Since you have this wand, you'd be invincible, but it's not the wand. It's like having all three things, but anyway, Harry decides to break the wand, which is a mature decision. Because, you know, nobody should have that kind of power. I think is a good way to end it. We get a bit of an epilogue 19 years later. We catch up with all of our various teen romance pairings. Harry Potter and Ron Weasley's sister, I forget her name, are sending their new kids off to Hogwarts. They've olded up Harry a little bit. They give him some gray hair, but he's still Daniel Radcliffe, and he looks like he's 10 years old. Sending their kids off to Hogwarts, and Harry's son is worried that he's going to be put in Slytherin house, and Harry's like, no, you just tell the hat that you want to be in Gryffindor, and it's cool. And Ron and Hermione are sending their kids off to Hogwarts. Anyway, there's not much there. It's a fine epilogue. We are left with some loose threads, as mentioned, the invisibility cloak in particular, but the Deathly Hallows thing, considering it's the name of the movie, not really a big deal. Don't know what happened. My favorite people in these movies were Harry's horrible aunt and uncle and cousin. Always a source of comedy in these movies. Not all of them, though, but we have no idea what happens to them. They aren't in this. I was looking at my notes for the previous movie, and they made kind of a big deal about Rita Skeeter's propaganda campaign in the press. Not really an issue here. In the last movie, like, the bad guys after Dumbledore has died seem to have, like, taken over political power, but we don't really get much of a sense of the overall world. Like, there was straight up, like, the bad guys were murdering muggles in the previous movie, but this one's pretty self-contained. Everything seems to happen at Hogwarts and, like, or just whatever location Harry Potter and Dumbledore. We don't really get a sense of what's going on in the world. The ending doesn't really... I was expecting Harry Potter to kind of become the new Dumbledore and be in charge of Hogwarts, but he's just sending his kids off, so I'm not really... I don't really know what happened to anybody other than some of them had kids that are going to Hogwarts, which is not really a very satisfying bow to tie on. Like, Harry Potter is still a kid and he killed Voldemort, and you'd think, you know, what did he do for the rest of his life? I kind of want to know, as mentioned before, what's going on with Neville and Luna. We don't see their kids going to Hogwarts. If we're going to flash forward 19 years, I want to know more than just they had babies. But that's it. The movie had some ups and downs, or the series, I mean. This one was pretty good. This one had a pretty... It was a scant 2 hours and 10 minutes. We're not bogged down by a lot of detours. It moves at a pretty good clip, and... You know, there's lots of good action in this movie. There isn't really any a whole lot of time spent on the teen romance, which is the worst part of some of these movies. But yeah, lots of stuff happens. There's not a lot of setup for anything because, you know, this is the big finale. We need to pay everything off. So this might be my favorite one, but I don't know. My memory, The Order of Phoenix, I think I remember enjoying on a more visceral level as we went. So those are my top two. But this is a silly fantasy movie for children, and I did enjoy watching the series. I've put many hours into this. I hope some of you have enjoyed listening to me ramble about them. Now that we've completed the series, you can binge listen to this. But yeah, I like it. I'm not compelled to go back and read the books. That's a lot of pages. Although I feel like there would be some value to it because it's probably going to answer a lot of the questions that I have, flesh out a lot of the stuff. I'm curious to know, you know, you can't put everything in the movies. So decisions were made as to which stuff to cut. And I think that's where the biggest disconnect is. I'm a nearly 38-year-old man, so the priorities for what was going to be cut and what was going to be included were not necessarily geared towards me. I'm not really the target demographic for this. I'm not the target demo for the books either. But, you know, it's a lot easier to justify watching 2 to 2.5 hour long movies than it is to read 700-900 page books or some craziness. They're probably pretty breezy reads, but I am a little bit curious about, you know, there was some stuff that I liked from this series that was kind of given shortchanged, that's probably been fleshed out. I still have no idea what the difference is between like Slytherin House. I know those are the jerks. Gryffindors are kind of the heroes, but I don't really know what a Hufflepuff and a Ravenclaw person is. I'll have to take some online quizzes. That stuff's probably more fleshed out in the books. And, you know, some of the characters that didn't really get their time to shine. I don't know. As curious as I am, I cannot see a universe in which I'm going to read all of those books. That seems insane to me. As far as continuing this series, I think the Fantastic Beasts or something is in the Harry Potter universe. Somebody had suggested that maybe I could get into that. Maybe I'll do another podcast about Fantastic Beasts, but I don't know. Will I do another series of movies? I don't know. Yeah, like I said, this has some ups and downs. There's some of the movies were straight up terrible, some of them were great, and a lot of them were in between, but that can be said with anything that has like 8 movies. I would say, I think I've never been a huge Lord of the Rings guy. I've seen the 3 first movies probably once each, maybe twice. I still haven't watched the Hobbit movies. I don't know if I ever will. Maybe that's another series. This series as a whole, I think I might like it better than Lord of the Rings. My main jam is horror movies, and generally the series is that I like that are at least 8 movies long. This one is probably better on average. Nightmare on Elm Street, I hold dear in my heart, and they're the worst movies in the Nightmare on Elm Street series are worse than the bad ones in the Harry Potter series. Very little teen romance. Oh, there's a little bit of teen romance in those, but it's usually adults playing the teens, and we get to see their boobs. But anyway, Friday the 13th has some real stinkers in there. I think this is a better series than that. Although, you know, there's not as much gore and murder in these movies as I would like. There's a little bit, but anyway, let's bring the Magic Moment series to a close. Unless I do Fantastic Beasts, but you know, this is the main end of it. I hope you've enjoyed listening to these. If there's somebody else that you think would like this, pass it along. Now they've got the whole series. This would be a fun thing if you have a friend or family member who's never seen these movies. Maybe they could do their own watch through and kind of listen to my thoughts as we go. But anyway, I have been John Forward. This has been Harry Potter and all of the various titles of these movies. That's all. Thank you for listening. This magic moment.
So please, save the last dance for